writing intent into being is what the runes do. You can call it cast magic if you want to, but it's just drawing the energy of your intent and putting it into a focused kind of a sense. And this tattoo, actually, I've been dying to get for a long time. This is Gungnir. This is the rune for Odin's spear. So back in the day, people would carve this into their weapon before they went into the battle. And they'd hold their weapon up and they'd claim this victory for Odin and they'd go about their business.
I'm a champion, I can never stop. If you put me in the square, I square up like a box. Good people, bad intentions, the tale of the tape. See the passion in my eyes, the real ones can relate. I said, I'm a champion, I can never stop. If you put me in the square, I square up like a box. Good people, bad intentions, the tale of the tape. See the passion in my eyes, the real ones can relate.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 41 of the Good People, Bad Intentions podcast. My name is Matthew Pine, and joined as our guest this week is Rob the Redbeard Logan, and he's going to be making his much-anticipated pro MMA debut, and this is on 4 weeks' notice, and this is going to be at Fight League Atlantic 10. That's Saturday, June 24th. And that's at the Tantramar Civic Center in Sackville, New Brunswick. And he's going to be going up against Jake Cunningham, somebody who he has a little bit of history with, because in October 2022, he actually competed against him at the Submission Kumite 1, also done by Fight League Atlantic. Talking with Rob and knowing him for a while, you know, he's 41 years old and he's not shied around the fact that, you know, he only has so much years in the sport, and he's really been always looking forward to making his pro debut. Been talking about it for a while, so I'm really excited to see him do that. And I know not too long ago, about 3 months ago, he had fought at the Redemption of the Irish card. This was a card that Kyle McNeil and the Real Deal Promotions had put on. And he went up against somebody that I actually know, Simon. It didn't go his way. I think it was a stoppage by the third round. So I'd love to talk to him about that and everything surrounding his pro boxing debut. But I know that MMA is, you know, what he's most passionate about. And I'm really looking forward to this fight. I talked with Maria Clinton and did that podcast with her. Her, as well as him, are both of my favorite fighters in Fight League Atlantic. I think they're doing a great job, both of them. But when we're talking about Rob, I think he's doing such a great job as far as getting eyeballs on the sport. He's a very entertaining fighter. He always brings it. And, you know, he takes it very serious. And I'm really excited to talk to him, talk about his perspective regarding fighting. Because Good People, Bad Intentions podcast, that's what we're all about, is getting to know fighters and their stories and why they do what they do. So without further ado, guys, here's Rob. Thank you so much, Rob Logan, for coming to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, brother. I appreciate it.
How are you doing? I know you're taking a late replacement fight when you're going to be doing your pro debut for MMA. How has the training been?
It's we've stepped it up a notch. We knew we had a short schedule to work with, so we really worked with the time that we had, and we're maximizing every minute of every day for training. So I have a schedule now that's, I wake up, I do my stretches and all the business I got to do to deal with being a 41-year-old MMA fighter, and then I do my first workout of the day, I get myself cleaned up, I go to work, and then I go train again. So it's usually I'm getting between 4 and 6 hours of training in a day and really building my lifestyle around maximizing that pattern and that schedule kind of a deal.
And I know that your pro debut has been a huge thing on your mind for quite a while. I've heard you talking about, you know, the fact that you think that your career is limited by, you know, the fact of you being 41 years old and only having so long. And I'm just curious, how does it feel to finally be getting to this point where you're going to be doing your pro debut?
It's really cool. I can't lie. It's a super cool feeling. So I did my pro boxing debut in March, and that was huge. So it was my pro boxing debut and my boxing debut. It's the first boxing match I've ever done, jumping in as a pro. And that was a massive feeling. Like, it's one of those things, like, I've grown up watching fight sports my entire life. And amateur MMA, well, I don't think there's as huge of a gap in the skill set between the amateur and pro MMA these days as people might kind of think by the name amateur. Just the vibe of being a professional athlete, especially at 40 years old, is kind of cool, you know what I mean? So it's, I don't know, I see the whole thing a little bit differently now. It's made me view the process a little bit differently now too, because any day I can be given one of the most dangerous guys, you know what, in the game, either on their way up or on their way down, or no matter what's what. Like, a couple fights ago, I was given a couple different names, and one of them, this guy was undefeated, looks like he's on his way to doing some pretty big things. And it's like, am I going to be the fella to step in and be in his way? You know what I mean? That's the options that I'm looking at now. So I really had to look at my training schedule, my supplementation, health, diet, lifestyle, all of it had to be adjusted, kind of a deal.
I want to get to your pro boxing fight, but just looking at this fight coming up June 24th against Jake Cunningham, I know that you had competed against him at the Submission Kumite 1 back in October 2022. Can you kind of talk about what that was like going against him in a grappling event?
Yeah, I think ideally we were supposed to be using the grappling match as a build up to an MMA fight that never ended up happening. He got shuffled into a title fight with Noseworthy, and then he busted his leg and he was out for a good while. But yeah, so it was kind of a pit stop in an MMA camp. This whole time period was, we're going to fight Jake. This is what we're up to. This is the game plan. We did the grappling kumite. He had a game plan that really stalled out what I was up to. And it was a submission only situation. I mean, FLA, I think, is calling it a draw now. At the time, he got his hand raised through a advantage, I think is what it was called. Not even a point, just he had done a couple things that worked out better in his end, basically avoiding my takedowns at the end of both of the rounds than I had done. So I was frustrated leaving that situation, and then finding out that he had taken another fight that wasn't with me at FLA 2, which was what I thought this whole thing was leading up to. I got a bit of a chip on my shoulder for this guy. And then I've heard from a million and one sources over the last couple of years, because this is something that started with me and him about 3 years ago when I first started MMA. He had hit me up, and I think his cousin or something was talking to me about, well, you guys should fight. He hasn't fought in 10 years. He's a really good guy. And I had had some conversations with him, and he seemed like a pretty good guy. And then he kind of took a different route with it, and he hit me up one day and messaged me, and he was like, hey, do you mind if I talk shit about you online to hype up a fight? And I was like, well, I'll punch you in the mouth if you do, man. Like, I'll talk shit with the best of them, but it's not, I'm either your friend or I'm not. You can't pretend to be like, oh, to hell with this guy, and then I'm going to shake your hand later. Like, if you have an issue with me and you take that public, well, now that's my issue with you. So I think he kind of laughed it off. He was like, haha, okay, so it's cool. I was like, oh, I will punch you in the mouth if this is the route that we go. And then there was some back and forth online, and I kind of made fun of his fight name at one point, and it turned into this whole big, like, bullying situation, and it was weird. And then now, for this to finally come around and be my pro debut, honestly, he's the reason I signed at 4 weeks. If it was literally anybody else, unless, you know, Francis Ngannou wanted to pay me that $2 million, we'll see what's up. I could use the money. But any other name, I would have said no. I want at least until, you know, July or August for me to do a full camp. I want to come out into pro right. But the personal attachment that I have to wanting to hit this guy in the mouth after 3 years of just dying to do it, and I think the storyline's good, and I've kind of been in camp for this guy for years. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, brand new guy, we got to figure out what he does. I knew what he was up to before. I know where he trains. We get his style, and I don't know. I don't think the camp feels as short to me as 4 weeks. It kind of feels like 3 years and 4 weeks, but
I was watching the FLA Exposure podcast you had done. Just I think it was ahead of Submission Kumite 1, and it was you, it was him, it was Justin McKenzie, I
Yes,
believe,
sir.
and of course Cat Clark was talking. And I saw towards the end, you know, the whole subject of him wanting to compete against you, and specifically because he thought that you brought the game. But I could tell from the way that you both were talking and whatnot that there was something kind of there. So would you say like there has been more than just what that episode showed, that there's been more things that have evolved throughout the years?
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. There was a lot more going on at that point, but the problem was, is I had kind of, I was getting the feel for what I could and couldn't say in a public setting while representing other people like sponsors and gyms and coaches and teammates. And I said a few things right off the get that were a little spicy, I think, and people were like, you got to cool your jets. So everybody expected me to just come onto that podcast and talk shit. They thought I was going to go right at them. You're this, you're that, let's do this, blah, blah, blah. Because we'd had a few semi-public interactions where it ended up like that. And my whole thing was, I need to go through this and be professional. This is FLA is a nice crew. I'm not going to mess up their broadcast. And I didn't want to get in trouble, to be honest. Like, there was a lot of people kind of watching from the sidelines that I didn't want to say too much and kind of spark something with their reputation or different gyms and stuff like that. So there was heavy feelings from me during that interview. And I know there was from him too. My biggest issue with the guy is he's a phony. Like, he presents as this super nice, jolly, helpful, super dude. And I know a lot of people that are like, oh, he's the nicest guy I ever met. And then I know 15 people plus me who are like, he's one of the biggest snakes we've ever met in our life, because he'll talk to you and be like, oh yeah, things are great, blah, 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 blah. And then he'll secretly talk to somebody else and be like, blah, 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 and say how he really feels. And there's a pretty big gulf between the way he acts privately and the way he acts publicly. And it may not rub a lot of people the wrong way, but for me, being an honest individual is a huge part of my entire moral code. Like, if I talk about you, I'll talk to you. That's the way I work. If you've heard something that you think I said, ask me and I'll come say it to you. I'm not this guy that's like, well, I'll play The Rock on TV and then it'll be Dwayne Johnson at home. Like, I can't be that guy. I'm Rob. When you're talking about me in the fight sense, you're talking about me in the home sense or in the work sense. I'm still the same guy everywhere. So I don't appreciate that flip-flop vibe that guy gives me, kind of a deal.
So if I'm understanding correctly, because I've watched, you know, your fights and whatnot, very entertaining fighter, of course. I love your fights, but it seems like you take the fight very serious when you're there in the moment, and you know you're there in the moment. But you know, I see you walking out, you're hitting yourself with the face, you're getting yourself on, you know. Is it fair that maybe he's kind of coming from like more of a promotional sense for the fight, and you're more living and breathing the fight itself? Is that maybe a fair way to compare your two approaches?
That's super accurate. Super okay. accurate. And I may even respect the way he was going about things if he did it with somebody else. But with me, I take this so seriously, it's not even funny. When I walk in there and I tell people I'm life or death when I fight. And I've had a couple fights that went to a decision. I don't think they're done. If one of us isn't choked out or tapped out or knocked out or something, I still don't think it's done. I feel like myself when I'm in that cage. I feel, as soon as my walkout tune starts, like I'm licensed to just beat some asses. Like, my glasses are off. Once that happens, everything's on. Like, I can't see past the end of my hand. So it's like, if you're that guy, you're getting it, kind of a deal. And I always tell people, like, as long as the ref keeps a shirt on, we're okay. But if there's two guys in there with no shirts on, this is going to turn into a brawl. I take the fights as seriously as I take being a father or being a son or a brother or a human being. Like, it's a part of me. I don't take that off when I come home. I don't put it on when I leave the house. And I certainly don't put it on when I'm talking to a camera or when I'm talking to a promotion or something like that.
I've heard in some interviews that there was some discussion of getting into some scraps before getting into MMA and even having an amateur boxing background. Is that where it kind of comes from, or?
Man, honestly, if you want to get into it, we've had a lot of talks, like, If you hang out with fighters all the time, you start breaking down the meta of like why we do what we do. And a lot of us have come from backgrounds that weren't necessarily, I don't know, the easiest backgrounds to deal with without taking on a bit of a combative nature yourself kind of a deal. And I've always been that guy. Like, I legit have wanted to be a Ninja Turtle since I was 5 years old. Like, I grew up with that stuff. And it was like, that was the most badass thing I've ever seen in my life. And then I start getting into confrontations at school, and then I started getting into fist fights with people when I was about grade six. Was the first time I broke my hand in a fist fight. It was the summer before grade seven. And it just took off after that. It became my identity. And it was definitely detrimental to me at that point in time. And it was one of those things everybody's like, you're going to be nobody, man. You can't just be fighting people and running your mouth all the time and stuff. And oddly enough, it's worked out pretty well for me now. Like, it's come full circle and and whatnot. But no, I used to get in fights quite a bit. It was kind of my way to, I don't know, let off steam. I've always felt more like myself when I'm in that zen state. I got into skateboarding a little bit, but I wasn't that great at it. But there was moments of that zen state that I'd kind of grasp. And I played bass, and I used to play drums a bit. And there'd be moments of flow state in music. But fighting, man, the moment you walk in there, it's flow state. Moment to the end. If you start thinking about what's going on, you're gonna fall hard. You know what I mean? You need to be in the moment. And it's, I don't know, out of my entire life, the only time I've ever felt actually in the moment and calm was when somebody's trying to take my head off and I need to do something about it, for better or worse. But the amateur boxing thing, I trained a bit, but I never really took it too far because I got really into smoking dope when I was younger, and they weren't big on that at the amateur clubs and stuff. And I did a sport medical, and some of that stuff came up. And instead of it being an awkward conversation with my dad, I was like, I'm done. I'm not going to do this for now. But fighting continued the whole time. Kind of a deal.
That's interesting what you said about the marijuana because of it being now legalized. Like, I wonder if that whole atmosphere would have been different if it were to have gone through now, you know, because I know CBD 100%. and that type of stuff is a huge part of now athlete recovery. And, you know, I also wondered to myself, what about all the cops that, you know, weren't able to get and become cops? Like, would they have become
military
cops now?
People,
you know,
that got military in trouble with the military, that could have been the best, you know, soldiers we ever had. They could be leading our forces right now. And they smoked a joint when they were in high school, so it didn't work out for them. I honestly believe things have a way of working out the way, not necessarily that they're supposed to, but the way you've built them up to work out. And I don't believe a fight career was good for me at that point. I think the best case scenario for me was getting the anger out, becoming a dad, getting in as many fights as I did, where it just got to the point where, like, I'm not looking for it anymore. Now it's, I can use it as an expression of myself without getting in trouble or seriously injuring somebody or losing my job over it or any of the, losing my glasses over it, which used to be a big deal. But it's, I don't know, I've turned it from a lot more of a negative outlet into probably the most positive outlet in my life right now. So
is it fair to say you were saying, talking about the flow state and, you know, how when you're fighting, you get into that. Do you kind of wish that you had got into it earlier in your life because of the fact that this is giving you so much, you know, benefit to your health?
I do, but I still don't. I think, number one, I would have ruined it. I think when I was younger, I had a terrible temper. I've ruined a lot of opportunities just by being a confrontational person with people. And I don't think I had the right mindset to deal with the structure. I don't think the sport then is where it is now, to the point where I would have gotten that out of it. It was more like a barroom brawl. I think, like, when I was looking at first getting into MMA was when it was first kicking around, and, like, it didn't look the way it does now. I don't think the sport would have had the same effect on me, and I don't think I would have had the same impact on the sport then that I can do now, kind of a deal.
And I wanted to just say too, that when you were talking about, not wearing your glasses, I mean, I wear glasses too. And, you know, I was just joking actually yesterday with somebody. I was like, well, I'll do all right fighting without glasses unless my opponent has one of those shirts where it has the letter chart where you got to read what letter it is. Like,
yeah,
you know,
no
can
good.
You read the bottom line there? I probably wouldn't be able to read their shirt, but you can,
no,
you can
it's,
find
it's
the,
it's kind of funny 'cause I teach a kickboxing class, and one of the things a lot of students will ask me is, what are you looking at when we're moving around? Because you're not looking me in the eyes and you're not focusing on anything. I was like, I kind of have an advantage there where I can't really look at too much. So I'm doing a magic eye test the whole time. I just look at center mass on your chest. I can see everything around me, and eventually a sailboat's going to pop out of there, I figure. But I just zone out. I can't really focus on anything with the glasses off, or I'll get all confused and lost. So, same as time management. People are like, oh, do you ever watch the clock when you're. I can't see the clock. I have no idea what's going on. Once those lights drop, and all there is the lights in that octagon, that's literally all I see. There's me, the other fella, the ref, and every once in a while we have a camera hanging over the side, and that's it. So it really helps simplify things in that sense too, not having the glasses on. It kind of drowns out a lot of the nonsense kind of things.
The natural follow-up is, how many times have you broken your glasses throughout your life?
I have a bag of them from just
Yeah.
from work. So I've been doing private security and bouncing and bar stuff for years. I have a giant Ziploc bag full of glasses pieces, just split lenses and broken arms. And I used to be known for having these crooked, wired together, taped up glasses because they just got too expensive. So, like, I remember there was one, I got brand new glasses, the whole two buy one, get one free deal. Went out to drink 2 nights later, and some guy headbutted me and just shattered my glasses. And I was down one pair 2 days in. I was like, there's no winning here, really. No, a lot. I can't even keep track. But I know that since I've started fighting in a cage, taking my glasses off ahead of time, none. I've broken no glasses. But
I
so far.
was in school fights, that used to be a thing. Like, people would get into fights, and then the loser was wearing glasses. They usually would stomp them, like,
Yep.
right, like, in the
It's a
fight.
dirtbag
And
move, man. But I mean,
yeah.
then your parents were paying the money for them. You didn't really feel it as much. But now if somebody steps on my glasses, the fight is starting again. You just motivated the second round of whatever we were into, because now I need my money back for that action. So, but yeah, no, it's glasses have actually played a pretty important part in my fight game, because I'm super defensive with people. If you come up, I'm get away from the goggles, man. Like, I can't be replacing these things. Give me a second, and then we'll get into it. But no, once the glasses come off, that's one of my triggers too, because it's normally like in working down home at like the dome and the palace and stuff. People joke like, once he gets his glasses knocked off, you're in trouble, man. Because then I can't see. I'm just hooking on to whoever's closest to me, and I think you're the fellow who broke my glasses, and we're going from there. But no, it's interesting being a fighter with glasses for sure.
So you're mentioning working at the dome, working at the palace. Is you work doors, do you?
So I started out working at doors. It's actually how I got into fight sports as well, because I was working at a couple of bars and the GM was Peter Martel. And if you
Okay.
worked on his staff, you had to go learn jujitsu so you weren't punching people when things broke out. So that's where I started learning to choke, and I got into no-gi stuff. I fell in love with live rolling. That was like some of the coolest stuff I'd ever seen in my life. I met guys like Jake McKenzie, Ryan Jimmo, RIP, Roger Hollett. Guys like that were in the gym moving around, and that was kind of my introduction to not necessarily being a part of MMA, but seeing that it was really just kind of across a fence. You know, it wasn't in California. It was right here in Nova Scotia or right here in the Maritimes. And like that was back 2006, I would say back then. Like some of those guys have definitely moved on from the sport and whatnot. And Jake McKenzie, he's one of the best in the world now. And I can't even imagine back then thinking this guy from Truro that was working at a bar with me was going to end up being like legitimately teaching Brazilians how to do jiu-jitsu. That just blows my mind. But yeah, the bar game's really how I got involved with MMA and training in the first place. And then I've kind of transitioned more into private security stuff. I'll still work bars if the money's right, but I'll do anything, basically. Like if you pay me and I'm interested in it, I'll show up.
So it says on your Tapology, are you originally from Truro?
I was born in Truro.
Okay.
So I was born in Truro. I lived in Upper Stewiacke for the first couple of years of my life, and then I started school and went through most of school in the Musquodoboit Valley in Nova Scotia, and then moved to Halifax. I started getting into some trouble when I started getting into my early teens, and I got shipped into the city to live with my dad, and things kind of went from there. But I've never really lived in Truro, but I think they kind of spun that angle where the first FLA was in Truro. It was kind of a good vibe to have. Oh, he's from here. Now he's fighting here. But I was born there. I stayed. The hotel I was in, I could have thrown a rock and hit the hotel I was born in, but I've never actually lived there. That was town when I was growing up. When you wanted to go get school supplies and stuff, Truro is where you went to get your binders and scribblers and whatnot. But
were you born in a hotel?
No. There's a hotel right beside where the hospital was.
Okay.
The old hospital. So the motel that I was staying at for FLA 1, we were standing out on the deck and I'm doing a burn and I'm looking over. I'm like, oh, there's hospital I was born in right there. Like, I could have thrown a rock and hit the old building kind of a deal, right? But sure, it's not exactly a huge spot. You could probably hit a lot of things with a rock from that distance. But it was kind of neat. As I get older, I like to recognize these full circle moments where I kind of come back around and find myself in these places where I started at, kind of a deal.
Well, I didn't know that you worked at the palace with Peter. I didn't know that you were back in the 06 days, the first ECC days.
Those were the fights I came up watching. I had no business doing it. I would have been about 15 years old. I put my name in. I didn't know who Peter was. I didn't know what any of this stuff was at all. But there was an ad in the newspaper, in the Chronicle Herald, in the classifieds that said, looking for mixed martial artists for this event. Hit us up at the Chocolate Lake Community Center, Peter Martel. ECC wasn't even a thing yet. He was kind of putting this all. I was like, yeah, I'll do it. I got a boxing background. I'm 15. I'll try real hard. And I never heard back. And I shouldn't have heard back. But I was there. ECC 1 basically all the way through, watching the early days and at the Forum, watching the boys fighting there and trying to get seats where you weren't sitting behind the posts. And I've been involved with MMA. I fell in love UFC 1 back in the early 90s. Like I say, I'm not a young fellow, so I was there right from the get. And I watched it grow in the Maritimes, and then I kind of got a little bit involved with it, like I say, when I was training with the guys from working downtown up at Titans back when it was in the basement of the Blue Nose Variety up in Fairview. And from there, I just kind of always stuck with the sport, and that's how I transitioned, basically, was I hit 35 and was pretty out of shape. I was about 260. I was smoking about a pack and a half, two packs a day. I hadn't really done much for about 10 years. I moved up here when my son was born, up to St. John. I hadn't really done much. I was just, sitting around dad doing my job. I was a mall cop for a bit. It was pretty rough. So I'd hit 35 and I was like, I'm getting married soon. And I wanted to be in better shape at 40 than I was at 20. That was the goal. And through that, it was like, what can I get into that might help me get back into shape? And a friend of mine, Kenny Doucette, a fighter from up here in St. John from back in the day, old Ken Do, he was getting ready to go fight a guy, and he needed somebody to come in and grapple, and there wasn't a lot of bodies around. And he said, well, I heard you used to go to Titans. Do you want to come in and help me with my grappling camp? And this was nearly 6 years ago now, and that's when it all started to come together. It was, all right, well, this is how I'm going to get in shape. And he says, the first night, he says, you're going to end up getting a fight. I said, I don't think, man, I'm pretty old and I'm not ready for that. I just want to get in here and train. And he's told me the whole time, you're going to fight. And here we are. He's still driving. He drives my wife to every event. So I go down ahead of time. I do my weight cut, everything. He's still the OG, man. He drives the wife down. He facilitates the whole thing. So he's driving me down to Amherst tomorrow for a training trip I'm doing. So he's facilitated the entire journey, but that's kind of how it came about, was his need for a training partner led into me wanting to lose a little bit of weight and get into better shape. And it all led to this kind of journey we're on now.
That's very nice of him to be given these, rides down.
He's legitimately one of the nicest dudes I've ever met in my life. And I've hired him at every business I've ever worked for or had. He's legitimately the most loyal person I've ever met in my life. And he saw something in me when we went in and trained that night, the first night right off the bat. And he had his own ego things, like he was in the security business and here's this other guy coming in and he's supposed to help me with my grappling and stuff. And he instantly was like, you're going to fight. We're going to make sure this happens. And he's done literally everything that he could. He drove me to Moncton for my MRI a couple weeks ago, because I got to get MRIs now because I'm an old man. So it's like, this dude is legitimately as much a part of my camp as any trainer or coach ever has been. So,
yeah, I think it's important to have those people that can see things that even yourself can't see, because I think sometimes it's easy to, you know, look in the mirror and really not know fully like what's going on. But if you can have somebody that can reinforce and show you and build your confidence and things like that, I think confidence is a huge thing.
Oh, 100%. My wife would be, I'd have to say, I got to step in. My wife would be one notch above Kenny. She's believed in me more than anybody I've ever met in my life. Obviously, that's why we're married and we're getting along so well. And we got a kid that's turned out to be a way better dude than I ever was. And every situation I run into, even if it's something that she doesn't really have a educated spin on, I ask her, how is this? How should I approach this situation? What should I do? And a lot of times she just points out what she sees in me that I don't necessarily see at that time. And honestly, she's pushed me more than anyone to this day. This, as soon as the 4-week offer came in for this fight, she said, yeah, you're signing it. Everybody on my team said no. I even had a poll on Instagram. I said, what do you guys want to see? You want to see me do short notice MMA fight or a kickboxing match with a full camp, which was on the table? And everybody was like, MMA, short notice. And literally everybody in my camp was like, kickboxing, 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 chill out, do a full camp, do this right. Because they know I'm down to go sometimes more than I should be. Like, it's good to have those people that'll hold me back sometimes a little bit and tell me to chill out when I'm ready to just jump into the next thing. But at the same time, at that moment, I really needed my wife to step in and be like, no, you've been waiting for this guy for 3 years. Like, it's Jake Cunningham. You just want to hit this dude. Go do it. And it was, she's definitely my number one cheerleader. Kenny Doucette, definitely number two. And then there's a whole crew of people after that. Too many to eat into, but I have a really good support crew around me. It's small, but the people I keep around me, I know. It's like a really good buddy of mine, a retired Navy guy, used to say all the time, is surround yourself with people that have your best interest in mind and be smart enough to listen to them. And that's kind of this idea that I've gone into this part of my life with.
Is it fair to say that that wasn't always the case and that you're now learning that this is important, or?
That was 100% not the case. That's why I've learned the lesson so well. I got in a lot of trouble when I was younger. I have a pretty lengthy juvenile record, and I did time and remanded in just about every building with bars in Nova Scotia. And it took going through all that and being this headstrong, confrontational person that thought he knew better than everybody around him to finally come full circle to this place where I can trust everybody has skills that I don't. And how can I help those people, and how can they help me in a way that we both kind of prosper? And it's gotten me to a place in life, like I, through parenthood especially, like having a son and having to confront a lot of the things that separate you from being a goofy kid in your 20s to being an adult that can deal with paperwork and doctor's visits and all this kind of, and giving advice to another human. That journey, and I really got into Ryan Holiday's writings and stoicism, like the philosophy of stoicism. And with the two of those and with fighting, it's just kind of chilled me out to the point where I can now appreciate all the things that, like almost all the things I'm talking about right now that I see as benefits. If we had this interview 20 years ago, it would have been the complete opposite. It's like, I steer my own ship. I take care of myself. I can do this. I don't need anybody around me. And that would have been the attitude I would have went into fighting with back when it started. And that's, I think, the biggest reason why now I have the ability to go a little bit further than I could have then, because I'm willing to listen to the people around me and take that advice and learn when I'm wrong, as opposed to just beating my head against that wall that I spent a great deal of my life kind of beating my head against. But yeah, it's definitely safe to say it was not that case. This is all kind of last decade stuff for me.
And I really appreciate you sharing this, because I think everybody can learn something from what you had just said. Because, you know, oftentimes now when I even look at my own life, right, and things that I've thought, you know, I regretted or anything like that, I realized that that's a huge reason why I am the person I am now, whether I like it or not. I've learned from those things.
And, well, it's the old, like, If you had a time machine, what would you go back and change? And I it's cheesy, but nothing. I can't change. I can't think of a single thing that I would change in my past that wouldn't take away from the things I enjoy about my life right now. If the experiences I went through then hadn't happened, I wouldn't have learned to be the person that I am now to either enjoy life the way it is or to be a good enough person to treat other people around me well, and all these things that came from being a bit of a shitbag and a troublemaker and a drunk and a scrapper. And like, my whole goal in life was, where's the party? And then we're going to fight at the end of it. Like, that's the whole deal. And then from that, I get to a point where every decision I make, I have now, especially I've come to realize recently, a lot of small eyes, like from the different gyms. And I've heard it from a few people online now about their kids tracking my progress, and my son especially. Like, this year, his friends kind of caught on to a bit of my online persona, and they're following me now. And every day I'm reminded I have to watch the things I do and say. Like, if I'm having a bad day and I feel a certain way about somebody, maybe I don't need to express that. Because then anybody that's watching me goes, well, maybe that's what I need to do to kind of make something happen in my life. And it's like, I'm becoming more aware, definitely, as time passes, the effect that an example can have on people. And I'm not out here saying I'm a role model by any means, but any positive example I can have, like you say, people learning from what I'm saying, that would be great. I wish I could have heard this 20 years ago and made sense of it. I doubt I would have. I would have told me to fuck off and mind my business. I have it all under control. But if there's one thing anybody can get from me, is it's never really too late to turn your stuff around. Like, you can be a better person. You can be an athlete in your fourth decade of life. Like, I'm turning into a pro athlete at the age of 41. That's ridiculous. I'm in better shape than I was arguably ever. I see a doctor now more than I ever have. Like, I'm on top of my health. And this is something I've heard from a lot of people in my peer group from growing up, is you make a lot of us old guys feel like we can still do stuff. And it's like, man, you're not old yet. And what is old anymore? Like, I see these dudes now that are like 75 and they're jacked, and I can't hold nothing to them. What's old? Old's a mindset. You know what I mean? There's certain limitations people run into. I'm not age shaming or ability shaming or anything like that. But I think a lot of it is just deciding, like, oh, I'm done. You know what I mean? I can't better myself, because I see people 10 years younger than me. I wish I had the time to go to the gym. I wish I had the drive you do. The drive I do, you have no idea how hard it is for me to drag my old ass out of bed some mornings after I just had a pack of 20-year-olds booting me in the head and throwing me around and dumping me on the ground for, like, you know, 3-4 hours the next day. Oh, it must be nice to have the time and the energy to do that, man. I don't. Nobody does. Just go out and do it, and you'll find the time. You'll find the energy. You'll find a way, and your life will get better. You'll have to eat better if you want to show up and train. You'll get into supplements if you want to get the muscle built. If you're smoking cigarettes, man, come do kickboxing. You'll get rid of that pretty quick. And I think it improves your life. Anything like that helps improve your life.
Going back,
I'm just kind of rambling at this point. I apologize.
No, not at all. But going back to your, you know, relationship with your son, and the fact that, you know, him and some of his friends are kind of catching on to the online persona. Like, what has that been like? What does your son think about what you're doing and that sort of thing?
It's changed a lot this year. In this year, I think his friends catching on was a big part of it. I got a shout out from a fella I'm not super even familiar with, LA Beast. He eats cactuses and stuff on YouTube, and like old Pepsi and stuff. A friend of mine got me a cameo from this fella. And that was kind of the start of it, where my son was like, wait a minute, that's the guy from YouTube, and he's talking about you. Because YouTube was the key then. It was like, oh, if you're on YouTube, then you're somebody. And we honestly had a chat not even a year ago, where I think I asked him, like, what do you think of me going out and fighting all the time and doing this stuff? He's like, I don't really think about it. It's kind of normal. It's what you do. You've been doing it forever. And he's just like bored by the whole thing. I was like, oh, okay, cool. No worries. Like, and then in the last year, I really think his friends coming on board changed it. But now, like, there'll be times I'll come in training, and he comes right out to meet me. He's like, hey, I was training. And I'll tell him, he's like, man, I think it's really cool that you're a fighter. And I think it's really cool that you're going out and fighting these dudes and all this stuff. And like, you could hand me a giant check and it wouldn't do a thing for me the way my son looking at me, like he's 14. There's not a lot of things that are cool in his life. And if they are, he doesn't admit it to me. He does it on Discord with his buddies. And for him to legit look at me and number one, tell me that he thinks I'm a good dad, but number two, think it's cool that I'm a fighter and his friends think it's cool. And like, I had one of his friends send me an edit of some of my fight clips and stuff with music in the background. It's like, hey, I'm a friend of your son's. I don't want to bug you, but here's this edit I did. And it was really cool. And you could tell that he put time into the whole thing. And it means a ton to me, to be fair. Like, this is just going back to Kenny Doucette for a second. His whole reason for fighting, like from day one all the way through till the end, and he would fight next week if you threw him a contract, is he wanted, when his son Googled his name, for something to come up. And he's happy with that. He didn't need to be the champion of the world. He didn't need to be the world beater. He fought a lot of super legit guys. Not all of them went his way. He didn't necessarily always put his most into training and preparing for stuff. But he set out to leave a mark that his son could look at and appreciate. And he does. His son thinks it's cool that he was a fighter. And he'll Google and show his friends. And I relate with that so much, it's not even funny. Like, leaving a mark on the sport, yeah, that'd be super neat. I doubt it's going to happen. Leaving a mark on my son to let him know that, like, at any point in his life, he can just decide to do something and go do it, that is super important to me. And if a couple of his friends get the same vibes, that's cool too, but they're not my kids, so we'll worry about them next.
Yeah, I think that's great that you're, you know, not only that your son is appreciating everything, but you've also grown a lot, and I imagine you have a lot of knowledge to pass on to him about, you know, the coming full circle and that type of thing. That's really great that you have that. And I wanted to kind of go back to the whole concept of going full circle, because I know that you had won a amateur title at the Atlantic Combat Sports 2 against Fabian Ixkis.
Your guess is as good as mine, bro.
Okay. I saw Peter Martel putting that strap around your waist. So was that kind of a moment for you too? Like just going full circle and everything like that?
That's like, if you cast this whole thing as a Hallmark moment, that's one of those, like, and here we go. That's where we tie things back to that Chekhov's gun at the start of the show. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, Rob trained at this basement gym, and like, I was convinced Peter hated me. And I even asked him, he put that belt around my waist, and I don't know if you can see it on the YouTube, but I leaned in. I was like, do you remember me? Because I'd said hi to him the day before at the weigh-ins, but he was kind of turned the other way and just like, okay. I was like, do you remember me? He goes, yeah. I was like, man, I thought you hated me. He's like, nah, it just takes me a minute to remember people. And yeah, I remember you and stuff. But like, there was probably no other thought more foremost in my mind right now than Peter Martel was putting a belt around my waist. That it was super cool. It was where I started watching local MMA. And to be fair, like, I had my heart set on that FLA belt that Noseworthy had had. Mm-hmm. And this ACS belt came along, and it almost felt like a bigger deal. Because Halifax, I consider my home. I grew up Halifax County pretty much my entire life, in and around the city and outside and whatnot. But Halifax is my home. Like, if you ask me where I feel at home at, it's the city of Halifax. And if you say, where would, like, the seed of this combat sports journey have started, it was Halifax. It was with Peter Martel shows. It was some of the guys I shook hands with at that event were guys that were killing it back when I was first going buying tickets to sit at the Forum and get the shitty seats, and hopefully you could see what was going on, and nobody knew what the hell was happening. And as soon as Ground and Pound started, people were tapping out. Like, this was, it meant a lot. It legit meant a lot to me for this, for not only Peter to put the belt around my waist. That was a pretty good moment. But it was just almost as if, I don't know, like the Halifax fight scene was putting a belt around my waist. You know what I mean? I've always felt like I was representing Nova Scotia, even when I've been living up here for my entire fight career. And it was a really good full circle moment. Like you said, it was one of those times where so many things fell into place. Like some of my family members that had never gotten to see me fight before showed up to watch me fight, and I win a belt. How much cooler than that does it get? You know what I mean? It was my first full knockout. Like, dude made snoring noises. You don't get that all the time. That was cool. Like, it was But honestly, like my life has been lately a series of these, you know, you plant the seed and you give it long enough and you keep watering it and you work along and you almost just assume that this task of watering this seed is part of your life. And then one day you turn around, there's a tree there and you're like, oh shit, where did this tree come from? I'm so lucky. And then you go, well, no, I've been watering this tree the whole time. I've cleared the brush. I made sure this opportunity was in place to happen. And then I took it when it showed up. And it's, my life is full of these moments and I can't wait to see the ones that are next. Like I've always said, my trajectory is like, I have a short shot in this game or I'm going to be too old to do anything with it. And I recognize that I want to do BKFC when I'm done. My last fight wants to be bare knuckle fighting, hopefully against somebody coming out of the UFC. There's a lot of those dudes coming out. They're like, I'm the baddest dude around, who wants to mess with me? And me, I want to. We'll be the same age. I'm not picking on an old guy. Maybe they're picking on the old guy. Well, I'll still probably be the oldest guy in the room. I want to retire at BKFC. So the fact that I've already had people approach me to talk about that as an option is just another hint of this everything coming full circle. Like if you say you want to do it and you put the work in and you let people know that this is something you're interested in, somebody's going to knock on your door one day and they're going to go, hey, do you want to be in the BKFC? Do you want to fight this guy? Do you want to fight Jake Cunningham in 4 weeks on FLA 10, you know, to cap off maybe the coolest run in old fella MMA history in Atlanta, Canada. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like this fight is a full circle moment too.
I'm just curious with this fight coming up and you being in St. John, and I believe he's in Fredericton. What's your training been like at the gym, Luye Martial Arts Academy?
So we're far enough away from each other that things are pretty separate. And in New Brunswick, it's training happens in little pools. It's not a giant community of guys that really mess around a whole bunch. Like there's certain guys I'll work with on the regular. Now, obviously I'm drawing a brand, Josh LeBlanc, FLA fighter. He'll come up from Moncton quite often and work with Lahoulier. Rory Gillis came up and worked with us at one point. But it's not a big, like, oh, this guy trains here, so you can't go there anymore. With Lahoulier, basically, Mike McLeod, another FLA fighter, had his camp entirely out of Lahoulier. And I was running my camp literally, I don't even know if it would be a full city block away. Like, you take a straight, you take a left, and you're at the building that I train out of. And it was a situation where we could put our training camps together. And what facilitated that actually was Flow State Jiu-Jitsu. Great name for a jiu-jitsu club. John Judo Williams is super OG in the sport around here. He ended up moving into Lahoulier's space. And he approached me about training with Mike originally. And I was like, oh, I might fight that guy. He's like, he's my weight. What do I want to do that for? And he actually brought us together. And Mike and I got along super well. And we have really complementary training styles, but different training styles. He is almost entirely traditional martial arts, where my stuff is like brawly in your face, a little bit of Dutch Muay Thai in there when I can. And we've come together really well and built a kickboxing program there. And then literally, like, kickboxing ends at 7:30, John and the jiu-jitsu crew walk onto the mats, and then I just put a rashi on and I'm doing jiu-jitsu. So it's three quarters of my training happens all in one Matt in that space now, and I have different training partners coming in from the different skill sets, and I still maintain a space off to the side that I do. Like, I was in there last night until I think it was 2 a.m. when I finished up. Like, I go in, crack the door, crank the tunes, and train all night. So it's, we have a really nice thing building right now. I think next year you're going to see the team that we're putting in place, especially some of the young people that are coming up. We will be competitive with some of these top teams in the Maritimes that you're seeing right now. And that excites me almost more than the level of training that I'm getting right now, is just how much putting all these different gyms together has kind of brought a new breed of fighter to St. John.
You mentioned Mike McLeod. Another thing that's really complimentary of you two is your beards. You both got your beard game on fleek.
Man, it's we're a couple Vikings, bro. He looks like Brock Lesnar right now. When I don't have my glasses on and we're training, he's thick these days. He isn't cutting down to 85 anymore. And he just had a new baby a couple months ago, so he's been kind of taking more time as a dad, and that bulks him up a little bit more than rolling all the time. So I'm rolling. I'm like, Jesus Christ, you look like Brock Lesnar, buddy. Got the big red beard. And it's funny because the first time we met ever was FLA3, the night I fought Owen Warren, and he fought Fabian Ixas.
Okay.
And I choked out Owen, and I got in the car. We went to get something to eat. I went home. He went out to drink and got hammed. Everybody coming up going, man, that was an awesome guillotine. Here's a beer. That was an awesome guillotine. Let me buy you a drink. And he was just going, yeah, thanks. Cool. Right on. So I got him drunk. So the next time I saw him, he goes, I got to thank you. You got me hammered after the fight. So I was like, I don't think I did. I wasn't even there. I went home. He's like, no, man. Everybody kept thinking because of the beard, they thought I was you. And they kept buying me all these drinks. I was like, well, at least I provided a service kind of a thing. And it's, we don't plan the beards, but man, they look good. It's just a natural vibe that comes out. You start beating the hell out of somebody and you can only hit the beard so many times before you go, man, I might want one of those. Like, gives you that extra inch of like the Matador's cape kind of a
yes,
deal.
Yes, I was thinking about that.
Keep your chin out of the way.
You mentioned Viking, and you got like a runic tattoo on your hand. I really like it. Connection?
So my people, to the best of my knowledge, I'm 3/4 Scottish. I'm 1/4 French Huguenot, and then like 1/16 Irish, because we got kicked out of Scotland. We kind of hung out in Ireland for a little bit, and then we got kicked out of Ireland, and we came over here. But my Scottish Highland connection, we came into contact with, they liked the summer, I guess would be the best way to put it in other areas. And they'd come over to Scotland, and they'd summer with our people, and that ended up getting mixed into the bloodline. So I have a really strong Highland with Norse leading background kind of a deal. And I... people have always put on the Viking thing on me for years. And I'm like, man, I'm a Highlander. And everybody's like, yeah, whatever, man. Like, they think of Christopher Lambert in that Highlander movie. They're like, they don't get how badass Highlanders were. And I'm like, come on, bro. Like, we were the Vikings of the hills, man. Like, we used to fight the Vikings. But no, I've come to kind of embrace the Viking side of things, even through just a lot of the culture that ended up coming to Scotland and England and areas like that from the Nordic areas and the giant reach that they had, like they put us in touch with the Mediterranean, and the Vikings are the reason that we had Damascus steel in northern Scotland. You know what I mean? Like they've had an impact on all of us. And I got into runes years ago. That was something I really thought was neat. And I really just vibe with it. I have a couple other ones scattered around me, and I've designed a few different. My wife's got a really cool one on her back that I designed. And the runes have a really good meaning with me, because it's almost, it's writing being, writing intent into being is what the runes do. It's, you can call it casting magic if you want to, but it's just drawing the energy of your intent and putting it into a focused kind of a sense. And this tattoo, actually, I've been dying to get for a long time. This is Gungnir. This is the rune for Odin's spear. So back in the day, people would carve this into their weapon before they went into the battle. And they'd hold their weapon up and they'd claim this victory for Odin and they'd go about their business. And that's the design for this, is my guy just basically scratched it in as if I was scratching my weapon. And it's something I've drawn on my wraps and on my hand tape when I'm training and for years. And it was just, it needed to be there. And it was the first time I've ever gotten a tattoo. And it was weird because it's the first time I've got a hand thing done at all. Least, like, it took no time to get used to it. Just felt like it was always supposed to be there kind of a deal. And he's actually, Odin's Keep is the name of the shop. It's a sponsor of mine. I was supposed to be going in to get another piece done. Until now, I got to go fight Jake. But I'm going, I got a Ninja Turtle piece I'm working on next. And we got some other stuff we're working on. But, he really helped bring this into this tattoo means a ton to me. And then we got the runes for Ruin, which is my walkout song. I feel a super connection to the song Ruin, my Lamb of God. That one, just when I hear it now, I'm just ready to fight people. I'll pop my glasses off, shirt comes off, let's do it. I don't care where we're at, grocery store, gym, we're doing it. And it's I don't know, I see tattoos as an expression of self, and I'm kind of glad I waited till I was a little bit older to start filling things in more, because I got some sillier ones when I was younger. And I think if I'd have had the means, I would have been covered in ridiculous tattoos by the time I was 25. So I'm glad now I can put a little bit more thought into the whole process. And especially with a sponsor, not having to pay giant amounts out the ass to get it done is kind of cool too. But
I like the name of the shop, Odin's Keep.
That's another full circle. That's I was looking for an Odin piece. So I've known this guy since I moved to St. John, like from working bars. I'd seen him around, and he was always a dude, like, we never really chatted much, but it was always a nod and a like a fist bump on the way by, and he was always super respectful and vice versa. And just different times through my life, he'd popped up, and he ended up at the jiu-jitsu gym, MXT West, that I was training at one point. And like, I just couldn't shake this guy for my life. And I was looking to get a tattoo, and I just started following him on Instagram, and I saw some really cool line work that he had done. I was like, man, Odin's Keep, this is almost like Providence. So I hit him up. I was like, listen, here's a couple of ideas of stuff that I want to work on. And he was more excited about it than I was. So it was another like full circle moment. Like, read the signs sometimes. If something feels like it might be the place for you to be, check it out. It might be the place for you to be, kind of a deal.
By the way, not to delve too much off topic, but you did bring this up a few times, so just curiosity. Favorite Ninja Turtle?
It changed. Okay. So it used to be Michelangelo, because he was the party dude that was pretty cool in the 90s. Raphael, now hands down. But I don't know how familiar with the modern storylines you are, but with the new, there's a new Last Ronin storyline. Mm-hmm. Back to Michelangelo. I'm a Michelangelo guy again, because it got real dark, real adult, and he was the dude. So,
was he the guy that actually was the? Because I didn't know who the Ronin actually ended up being. Because I know the Ronin had, I think, all of the weapons. Right? Was it Michelangelo? Yeah,
and that was like, spoiler warning. If there's anybody who hasn't read The Last Ronin, and there's a video game coming out for it soon, I think too. It's an amazing storyline, and it happens in the future. And like, the basics of it is you just get this really dark, brooding individual. It's one of the turtles. You don't know who it is until the end. And they're just depressed and they're bummed out and hateful and nothing but vengeance in their whole system. Everybody else is dead. Splinter, the rest of the turtles, and he's on this quest for vengeance. And then it's almost like when you reveal it's Michelangelo, the guy who was like always happy. He was always cheerful. He was always the party dude. Just breaks your heart. You're like, dude, now he's like the most bum dude I've ever met in my life, and he's on this like, I don't care if I die, mission of vengeance kind of thing. It's a super cool storyline. I think anybody, and it, you don't even need to be a Ninja Turtle guy, just check it out. Last Ronin is an amazing storyline.
I've always been a huge Shredder fan, and I've always liked villains more than like main characters. Dude. You get a Shredder.
I don't know how much reflection we're working with here, but I got.
Oh, there we go.
There's my little Shredder here. I got a Leonardo back there too. That and Jonathan Davis from Korn, but he's not really a Ninja Turtle.
Well, you got okay. This goes back to the tattoo. So you got a Korn tattoo.
I do. On your arm.
You a big Korn fan?
I sure was. So I will still listen to the first couple albums religiously. After that, we kind of parted ways. It was like a good relationship, and then it kind of went into different branches. So it's. Sometimes I have to tell people, like, this tattoo I got when I was 15 years old. So you got to remember, that's like, what now? I don't even want to think about it. 20, 25 years ago? Mm-hmm. Something? No. 15 years ago? No. 25, something like that. Yep. I'm not good at math. I get hit in the head for a living. So I got this tattoo back in the 90s, basically, is the best way we'll put it. And I refuse to cover it up. I'm the type of person where once you make a decision, you kind of roll with it. And I went into a tattoo shop with my first tax return. I was 15. I had a summer job. I went in. I had this cool Korn sticker. I said, dude, hook me up with this. The sketchiest dude I've ever met in my entire life on Gottesden Street. That I'd sailor something. I don't even know. It was a sketchy spot. And buddy just grounded in. He had no idea. I was clearly 15 years old. I had another guy with me that looked 12. And he just grinds it in. Coolest thing that ever happened to me in my life. I walk across the street. There's a Chinese food place. I go in, buy a beer, still no ID, drink a beer with my fresh tattoo, first tax return. I'm telling you, brother, top 10 days of my life still. And I recognize that, and I will not cover this, because as much as I might feel like a bit of a nerd now as a 41-year-old with a Korn tattoo, and they've done some dubstep shit and all this other stuff, that day is still like, you can't top that for me. That was, if you have a day like that in your life, man, I'm all for it. You might as well get a tattoo to commemorate it. And if the tattoo is the day you're commemorating, even easier, man. Like,
Gottesden, what a street. What a street in Halifax. Got to get a gun.
Dude, a lot of I've made some choices on Godison Street, that's for sure.
So I see you repping a really cool hat for Art of Savagery. I know that
Art of Savagery is my brand.
Yes. Can you talk about your relationship with, I believe his name is Ryan? And
Ryan Grant.
Ryan Grant, yep.
Yeah, no, he I loved the brand before he was involved. So Technacity was a brand that was kicking around the combat sports scene for a couple of years, and they had East Coast Fight Style logo, and I got a ton of their hats and shirts still. I was right in love with it then. And I met Ryan through jiu-jitsu. He was a member of MXT when I was as well. It's where I got my blue belt at. And we had trained together an awful lot and rolled and this and that. And he bought Technacity and started Art of Savagery. And instantly I was like, dude, this stuff looks awesome. I want in on this. Like, I'm buying all the gear I can get. I bought as many of the old Technacity hats as I get. I wear them still nonstop. And we ended up talking when I started being in a position for t-shirts. There was a lot of people bugging me for t-shirts, and honestly, I tried it once and I lost a bunch of money. I'm not a t-shirt guy. I'm a fighter. I can do a lot of cool stuff, but mailing t-shirts to you and making money off that is not my forte, it turns out. So I said, listen, man, how about you make these t-shirts, keep the money. He used that to pay his table fee at the FLA event that I was doing. And that was kind of the start of this relationship where, like, now I have a discount code, Redbeard15 will get you 15% off kind of a deal. And you go on the website, like, I'm right there, right in the center of it. And we have a new updated East Coast Fight Style logo. I've been fighting for this to come back for a while. And I like to feel a little bit of responsibility on it, because now, instead of, there used to be a couple of like skeleton fists, and then there was like a choke thing going on with a skull. Now there's a boxing glove, an MMA glove, and a jiu-jitsu belt. And I'm like, I don't know anybody else on the roster that's boxed, done jiu-jitsu, and MMA. Come on, bro. That's obviously your boy on that t-shirt. But no, he treats me really well. I've worn his gear now to every chance I've gotten. He sends me new stuff. I don't know what the situation is and how much we're supposed to tell about it right now, but mm-hmm. there might be a design for some rash guards and shorts that your boy put together okay. in the future. And it is the only source for official Redbeard merch. So if you want to go get those shirts, they're really cool logo. Dave Fretz, a graphic designer that's involved with FLA quite a bit, he hooked me up with a logo a couple of years ago, and it looks sharp on shirts. And if you want to get one of those, artofsavageryapparel.com. Redbeard 15 gets you 15%. It's a good deal. And these cool hats. So this is from the new Blood Drip. There's a couple names for it. We call it the Blood Drip because it's all drippy, but it was, let's make a metal shirt, but Art of Savagery. So we got a nice little death logo, Art of Savagery. I had the hoodie. I should have been wearing that one. It's got a nice East Coast on the side. He has other stuff with more jiu-jitsu branded stuff because he's super into jiu-jitsu. But he's a really wicked dude, too. He steps up to help a lot of the events. He's involved with Rogue, FLA, anywhere he can to sponsor and be a part of the combat sports scene. And he's helped myself, my coach, John Judo Williams, is sponsored by Art of Savagery as well. A couple other athletes that have that we've worked with in the past and stuff. And he's one of those guys that wears his heart on his sleeve and you like what you see. Like, he's one of the coolest dudes I know. And he won't bullshit you. If you ask him a question, he'll tell you the truth, whether you want to hear that particular version of it or not. And he appreciates that in other people, which is something that's important for me. And he's a real dude. Like, I appreciate human relationships quite a bit. And he is one of those dudes that I'm proud to know and proud to work with. Just one sec. My dog's messing with my curtain here.
No worries. All messed up. Hello, doggo.
He's getting jealous, boy. He's getting too much attention going to you and not enough to him, but... Ryan Grant, Art of Savagery, great company, 100%.
Yeah, and I really like what he's been doing. I know for a while I thought apparel was something that I wanted to get into, and I was just like, yeah, this is really hard, and I just like, you know, I'll just focus on the podcast and what I've been doing here.
Your hats are dope, though.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Dude, I can't lie. I meant to get one a while ago, and I keep forgetting. So if you still have any left, I do want to get my hands on one of those.
Yeah, yeah. I can
that definitely... logo. I was saying the other night to my buddy in the gym. One sec.
Yeah, sure.
Get out of here, Mike. You're killing the cord. All right.
So this is Django. He's a slightly aging Boston Terrier, and he likes to tangle himself up in cords. So I'm just untangling him right quick.
Okay. Okay. No worries. I thought I could hear like it was like he had like a heartbeat monitor or something going on. I could hear some beeps.
It was my cord getting pulled out and put back in while he's here looking for attention underneath me. So yeah, where were we, brother? I lost you there.
No, you were saying something about the design, the logo for Good People, Bad Intentions.
Oh, yeah. Good. I'm glad I remembered that. We were talking about that at the gym the other night, and my buddy was like, Good People, Bad Intentions, which one are those? I was like, it's the coffin with the GBPI in the, and he goes, oh, yeah, cool. That's a cool logo. I was like, man, see, I got to get one of those hats. And it's crazy. I can appreciate how much a good logo can help build a brand. And your logo kills it, man. 100%.
I really appreciate it.
It's how I actually remembered the whole scene in the first place to come back and end up watching your videos on YouTube. Was I was like, who's this guy? These dope hats. And I saw you on the FLA podcast, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, you did it?
Yep.
That's what it was. And that's when I first saw them. And I was like, man, that's a dope hat. I like that.
Yeah, there's like a little bit of a story that I would like to go into more about the whole process of what the logo means. But
oh, please do, yeah.
Let's just say the bad intentions, you know, people get in coffins with bad intentions. So that's kind of the where it's going with that. But yeah, and I really appreciate that compliment. It means a whole lot. And Alexander, if you're listening, my friend Alexander helped me with that design. And he's been a huge support for me going as far as the graphics and whatnot. And he does that for...
Oh, man, a good logo. You can't beat it. Like, it's something like that, too. Like I say, it's so sharp, and it's... You can print it on anything. If it's on a white background, make it black. If it's on a black background, make it white. And it stands out. Django. That's the wife coming home. But, no, I think a good logo is super important. And it's... Like I say, it was the first thing that stood out with me to introduce me to your brand was that logo. So... Don't give up on it, man. Keep slinging that stuff. I even know a guy who has a t-shirt company I might be able to put you in touch with. Might
okay.
be able to work with some kind okay. of a deal. But...
So I wanted
then you
to...
get...
Sorry?
No, you go ahead, brother.
No, just you can finish your thought there.
Oh, I was thinking maybe you could even... Because he's trying to work out a deal with fighters where you give the logo, you take a chunk, he makes the t-shirts. If you want to start running official merch, I know a guy.
Okay.
We can work it out.
I'll have to get talking to you behind the scenes on regarding that. So I kind of wanted to just at the end kind of talk about your upcoming fight. I know I've watched some tape of Jake. My assessment has been that he's quick to start the fight, and you know, high volume pressure against the cage. What do you?
Good bully style.
What do you anticipate with this fight? How do you assess the fight and give us your kind of your thoughts?
Well, this is a part where I'd probably be coached by somebody to come up with some nonsense and say, I'm planning this, but I'm doing. But honestly, I think there's two options. I think really he can blitz me like he did with Fabian, or he can take his time and work his way into something in a smarter way. And I'm preparing for every possibility. I have every type of training partner you can think of that I'm working with. I'm traveling, like I say, I'm going away for the weekend to go work with the last guy that subbed him in a tournament. Because I want every angle that I can possibly get on this guy. As much as I don't appreciate his character, I can see the threats that he presents in the cage. One of the first things I took from our Kumite experience was that he wasn't easy to take down. He was a physically larger person than I had kind of read from pictures of him standing beside other people and just seeing him around. And it wasn't that it was like, oh my God, this guy's so huge. It was just one of those moments where you go, okay, he's a little bit bigger than I thought he was. And I couldn't walk right through him. I thought originally I hadn't heard of anything that he'd done jiu-jitsu wise. All I got to do is get a hold of him. This is my match to lose. And it was my match to lose. So coming out of that, I recognized that he could be the most dangerous dude I've ever encountered. He could melt in the first minute because I don't believe we've ever seen him deal with somebody with my fight IQ, my skill set, my drive. I just don't think he's ever run into a dog like me in a fight. like, not to take away from the things he's accomplished, but as far as I know, like, the only fight he's been involved with in the last 10 years was fighting a guy I gave a concussion to, like, 30 days before that. And I honestly don't think Fabian was in any position to take that fight. I'm not alone to think that. I'm not his coach. It is what it is. But that quick of a turnaround from the way he lost at that ACS bout to then dealing with a guy that comes running in like a human wrecking ball, I don't think was the best course of action. And I, even from talking with him after the fight, I really just don't think that fight would have went that way if it was in a different time and place. Like, I don't know if he would have had the same success if I hadn't had that fight with Fabian a couple months ahead of time, or if they had a fought when we fought and then I fought Fabian afterwards, kind of a thing. I don't think he would have ran into the same fighter that he did. And that's, it's a double-sided coin, brother. Like, it could be the most dangerous situation I've ever found myself in, with a young fella who has more motivation to fight me than literally anybody I've ever run into. The guy's been calling my name for 3 years now, so I'm sure he thinks about me. I'm living in his head somewhere. So when he trains, he's hitting that bag at some point thinking about me. He's, when he goes to the gym or when he's laying on the couch and his leg doesn't work, he's going, fuck this Rob Logan guy, I'm coming to get him. So I gotta be cognizant of this situation. He could be the most dangerous dude I've ever fought. He could be a big pile of hype that I'm going to deflate, but it's not going to change the way I fight or go into this fight. I'm Redbeard. I fight the way Redbeard fights. I literally haven't watched a moment of video of Jake for this entire camp. I have people that do that. I'm not that people. I don't care. I don't want what I think he might do to affect the way I prepare. Or if I go into this thinking, oh, there's no way he's going to grapple with me, this guy could have been spending 8 hours a day for the last, you know, couple weeks doing nothing but Imanari rolls, and he's going to come flying in here and do some Ryan Hall stuff on me. Or if I think, oh, he's going to wrestle with me, maybe he's going to come do some spinning back kick shit and blow my head right off my shoulders. Like, it's, I can't assume he's bringing any skill set that isn't dangerous. And I can't allow my personal feelings and emotions that I have towards what I perceive as his character paint how I prepare for him as a fighter. So I'm preparing for this fight legitimately as the most important fight I've ever had. I'm doing 2 days every day. My diet's changed. I'm dealing with health professionals for my recovery that I've never dealt with before. I'm feeling like I'm having better sessions than I've had in years. I'm dealing with it like a job. So I'm definitely taking the threat seriously. And I literally expect anything from him. Anything. He could come out and shoot a fireball, bro, and I'm going to be ready for it. Like, I just need people to know that the guy you're used to seeing fight is going to that fight. So you play this out in your head however you want to. You see whether you think I'm just a guy with a right hand, or whether you recognize that I can choke out giant dudes too, or I can sleep a fella. Like, you think what you want. Play that out in your head and tell me this isn't going to be a good fight. Just do it. Even if I smoke him in a minute, great. If it goes 3 5-minute rounds and we're both ears are hanging off and shit by the end of it, tell me that didn't just make the night. You know what I mean? This is a good fight for everybody, me included. I know the original question I've kind of drifted off from a bit. What I expect is I literally expect everything. I expect a hard fight. I expect a guy that knows I'm historically a bit of a slow starter to try and capitalize with that. I expect a guy that trains with a boxing gym that really focuses on forward movement and aggressive actions and line drills to probably come storming out and try and take my head off. It's probably what I would do if I was in that situation. Also have to assume he has somebody in his ear that's smart enough to tell him that maybe we're working for that. Maybe that's not the way to go. So your guess is as good as mine, but I'm preparing for everything.
I love the breakdown. You know, you're talking about possible strategies and stuff, because I was even thinking some stuff that you were talking about. So it shows that you've put a lot of thought, you and your team, a lot of thought and preparation, despite it being a short notice fight. Because I know you said for 3 years you've been eyeing this guy, so it's a short notice fight.
Can't forget about him. He says my name every 3 months. I hear Jake says he wants to fight you. I got people saying Jake wants to fight you in boxing, but he says you backed out of a fight. Well, buddy, I never signed for boxing. I've never backed out of a single thing I've put my name on. I've signed every contract that has hit my email. That's a fact. I've never turned down a contract. The second that dude's name came up, I was ready. And it's not because I don't know who he is. I've known who he was. I have an opinion on who he is and what I can do to deflate some of that image that he's built about his fighting style. I'm getting a little fired up right now, but I legit don't like the guy. I'm not going to lie. I don't like his vibe, but I have to be aware he could be a dangerous person to me, especially seeing as he's been in a fight camp for however long. I know he puts a ton of effort into his fight camps. I know he's using health professionals that can give really good advice. He's got a nutritionist that's top tier. He's clearly done a lot with his physique and his training and his weight loss journey over the last couple of years. So he has the capability of being dangerous. He has that capability. But, and this is, I'm going to go, we'll go Ninja Turtles on you again. I literally see Jake like Krang. He's got this big, dumb robot body and this sour little brain. I'm fighting the sour little brain. I'm fighting Krang, not the big whatever his big robot body was called. And if I let him express his game on me, I think I'm going to be in trouble. But if I back him into a position where I don't think he's ready to deal with somebody who takes fighting as seriously as I do, I think that's where I come out on top. I think if we get into a position, like I say, we get into a professional MMA fight, I think I come out on top. I have more fight in me at the age of 41 than this guy does after fantasizing about fighting me for 3 years straight. Straight up. That's my guarantee. Again, I'm getting fired up.
Yeah, no, and I know you're soon going to be training, so I just want to say a huge thank you there, Rob, for coming on the podcast. You're somebody I've had my eyes on for a while to be on here, and I really want to wish you the best of luck June 24th when you do fight Jake Cunningham for FLA 10. And, yeah.
I appreciate
that. Best of luck, my friend.
I've been keeping an eye on you for a bit, and I'm honored to be on here, actually. Like, you've had some big names in the scene. Come on. And I'm pumped and honored to have been on here and given a chance to talk. I don't really, you might have noticed, I don't really prep the things I say too much. So I'm not really sure all what we've talked about today, but I'm sure it was good. The good thing about me is it's always honest, man. So
well, I always,
if you ask me today, I'll tell you the same thing.
I always approach this first as a conversation. So, you know, as much as I try to prep for the interview or the podcast or whatever, I mean, it's whatever we want to discuss. It's whatever that comes up in the conversation. And I think you'll see with this podcast, we really just both followed what we're interested in knowing about each other.
Good. So. That's what I'm, man, honest interactions are what make this world go around, yeah. Brother. And that's, if I had to pretend to be somebody else, I couldn't do interviews. I got my little vape pen there. I get all ripped and just have a chat with a buddy of mine. I'm good to go.
Awesome. Well, best of luck there and hope you have a good rest of your day.
I appreciate you, brother. Thank you for having me on.
And that's the end of the podcast for today, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. A lot to take with us. If you're a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan, I hope you enjoyed that little conversation regarding that. But in all honesty, Rob did share quite a lot of interesting information. You know, a lot of his backstory I was not really 100% sure of, but it's really interesting hearing that, you know, he's been around the sport for so long, you know, watching UFC 1, being in Halifax during the Palace days, and seeing ECC, and seeing, you know, the likes of, you know, Roger Hallett, and, you know, TJ Grant, and Mike Malott, and Gavin Tucker, and, you know, Chris Kalidas. Am I missing any names? I mean, there's so many great people that have come from this area, and for him to have also been from this area as well and to share that was great. I think the sport is only growing right now. Of course, there's a lot of things in the background that I think have to be worked out for sure, but you know, we have a lot of great athletes in the Atlantic provinces. And that's why I'm so excited whenever Fight League Atlantic or another organization puts on fights, and to get people in this area, you know, some competition so they can grow and become better. So yeah, I think we have a lot to extract, guys, and I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, guys, if you're listening to this podcast, make sure to leave a rating on whatever platform you're listening to it. And if you like the podcast and want to check out more episodes. Make sure to subscribe so that way when a new episode comes out, you won't miss it. And if you're part of the YouTube family, well, you can always like, comment, as well as share this video. That always helps. And yeah, in your comment, what did you think about the episode? Was there anything that really caught your eye, caught your ear, if you're listening to it? And you know, I really love hearing from you guys always. I always love the support. I appreciate it. It really keeps the podcast going, the dream going. So without further ado, guys, hope you have a good rest of your day. Whatever time you're listening to it, take care.
Yo, the ring general, sweet science deep like a mineral. You can see the hunger in my interviews. Peep the interlude, this is just a preview. Give you all I got, put the past in the rear view. My team ready, the theme steady. Got bad intentions like I seem petty. Still a good dude, stay humble, never messy, never crumble under pressure. I'm shining like God bless me.